we want to put a huge amount of resources on the table. I think teachers who go to Hooper Bay, we should pay them more money.
The education secretary addresses Alaska's struggle in rural schools. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 18th of March. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an Alaskan peace group finds it was under surveillance by the federal government.
So we know that there was some monitoring going on, and it also just raises the question of just how much were they doing that they're not telling us.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by the Association of Alaska School Boards. Parents that read to their children foster early learning and educational development for children and youth. Information at aasb.org.
The two wolves suspected of killing a teacher in Chignik Lake last week did not have rabies. The animals were shot by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game earlier this week and tested at the state virology lab in Fairbanks. Louisa Castrodale is an epidemiologist who reviewed the results for the state health department. She says it wasn't a surprise to have the tests come back negative.
When we're testing for rabies, we're, you know, looking for aberrant behavior, because that's something, rabies can definitely make animals act unusually, and they can lose their fear, and they can do things like attack without provocation. But they're also, you know, especially for wild animals, there's behaviors that may kind of mimic rabies, but that's just part and parcel of how a wild animal might react.
The state Fish and Game Department is testing the wolves to see if they can be linked conclusively to the teacher's death. Candace Berner was a special education teacher with the Lake and Peninsula School District. Education Secretary Arne Duncan says his visit last year to a village in southwest Alaska has affected his view of rural education and what must be done to help rural students. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Secretary Duncan spoke before a U.S. Senate committee Wednesday about the No Child Left Behind education law and how he wants to change it. The secretary visited Hooper Bay in August.
I got to tell you, that visit impacted me deeply. That and a visit to a school in Indian Country in Montana, Northern Cheyenne, I've had some extraordinary days over the past year, but those are two that are always going to stick with me. And to see the struggles of those communities, to see the lack of resources and what we need to do. I just want to give you my personal promise that I want to do everything I can to help those children be successful.
The White House wants to overhaul No Child Left Behind as it comes up for reauthorization to the point of changing its name, a move that's typical when a new administration comes into office and seeks to put its own stamp on federal law. But Senator Lisa Murkowski and others who represent rural states are concerned the proposed changes won't fix problems faced in small communities. She sits on the education committee that questioned Duncan Wednesday and said some of the solutions to help struggling schools won't work in places like Hooper Bay.
So when we talk about the options, replacing the principal, rehiring no more than 50% of the school staff, I mean, this is our problem. We can't keep good people there.
Murkowski asked how much flexibility districts and states would be granted. She says Hooper Bay has fallen into the low-level needs improvement status of No Child Left Behind for 6 years. Fewer than 30% of students were deemed proficient last year, and only half of students graduated. Duncan agreed that keeping good teachers in rural communities is a huge challenge and needs to be actively fought.
And so I can't push this hard enough. We want to put a huge amount of resources on the table. I think teachers who go to Hooper Bay or go work on an Indian reservation, we should pay them more money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just about money. We need to do lots of other things. We need great principals. We need to pay principals more money and keep them there. But we treat all these jobs as equal. And when you go to a place like that, that literally doesn't have running water, that doesn't have, they actually in Hooper Bay did have teacher housing, but huge, huge challenges there. The school I visited in Northern Cheyenne Country with, you know, massive teacher turnover. How can students learn when every year, every 2 years, you know, it's a whole new team there?
And you're never able to build a relationship or any kind of trust with the teacher or anyone within the administration.
Exactly. So I think we haven't, this is, Senator, I just want us all to think about this. I think as a country, we've lacked total creativity in this area.
Murkowski noted it will take more than money and asked for flexibility from federal rules when dealing with unique challenges. Duncan agreed.
Absolutely, I'll give my commitment. We'll absolutely try and do that. That's the right thing to do. And let me be clear, it's not just about more money. It's about creating a climate and environment in which teachers and principals want to do there. What about as a country, what if we had some schools of education specifically training teachers to go to rural communities, specifically training teachers to go to the heart of the inner city? What's our pipeline of talent of folks where this is their heart, this is their dedication?
One of the toughest mandates in Alaska of No Child Left Behind has been a requirement that teachers be highly qualified in each area they teach, a huge challenge in rural communities where teachers tackle multiple subjects in sometimes many grades. Secretary Duncan says the Obama administration hopes to change that by instead focusing on evaluating teacher effectiveness and looking at whether students are learning and improving rather than judging teachers' qualifications. Senator Murkowski has introduced her own bill that would rework No Child Left Behind. Her office says she hopes to incorporate elements of it into the bill that will eventually come before the Education Committee. As to what the Obama administration will call its version of the Education Act, Duncan has said he'd like suggestions from school children around the country. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
A group of Alaskans were surprised recently to learn that their organization, Alaskans for Peace and Justice, was monitored for a time in the fall of 2005 by a military intelligence division that deals with tracking organizations affiliated with foreign terrorism groups. The information was made public after the cyber civil rights group Electronic Frontier Foundation obtained numerous documents from the Pentagon through a Freedom of Information Act or FOIA request. The files reveal that the data collection was illegal, and the Military Intelligence Inspector General ordered all computer files purged, and personnel were given training on the legal lines of surveillance. Katie Parrish has been part of Alaskans for Peace and Justice since 2002. She says it's troubling that even after it was determined the organization was not tied to foreign groups, military intelligence continued to monitor them. That, Parrish says, is a waste of taxpayer money.
Don't they have better things to do with their time? And we know we're not there to advocate for what the Tea Party people are advocating for, which is to overthrow the government. We're trying to figure out ways to encourage people to use nonviolent conflict resolution when it comes to major foreign policy.
Parrish says a series of memos within U.S. Northern Command describing actions from the Joint Task Force on Terrorism show the military monitored web activity of the peace advocacy group and in at least one instance attended one of their rallies outside of Fort Greeley. Anchorage teacher Greg Garcia was at the Fort Greeley missile defense protest. Garcia grew up in a military family and was born on Elmendorf Air Force Base. He says in 2005, Alaskans who were upset with the buildup to war in Iraq were outside of Greeley with homemade signs and an inflatable mock missile. At one point, a helicopter flew directly over them, tilting the rotors, scattering people and signs in the wash of wind from the blades. Garcia says Alaskans for Peace and Justice work hard to organize peaceful events that people would feel comfortable bringing their children to. He says their actions were lawful and nonviolent, but when the Greeley rally was over and people were packing up to leave, four-wheelers with military personnel suddenly started up and drove out of the woods across the road from them. He says they had no idea they were being watched from outside the military compound.
So we know that there was some monitoring going on, and it also just raises the question of just how much were they doing that they're not telling us? Did they have people attending our meetings? Were they doing more than just intercepting emails? Was there collection of the email lists? Things like that. We don't know. And everything we were doing was above board.
Kevin Morford is the treasurer for Alaskans for Peace and Justice. He says, unfortunately, there is a long history of domestic spying in the United States. He points to the counterintelligence programs known as COINTELPRO in the 1970s, when U.S. activist groups were infiltrated. He says spying goes back farther than these better-known programs, and he thinks it's important for American citizens to be vigilant in protecting their fundamental civil rights.
Unless there are strong protections put in place in the law, the government will tend to keep pushing the envelope and pushing the envelope, trying to do more and more to expand its powers. And when things like this are revealed, it's an opportunity for the public to push back and say, stop, you're not supposed to do that.
Elmendorf officials did not respond to repeated calls for comment. The point of contact on the intelligence gathering for U.S. Northern Command was redacted or blacked out on the released documents. Other groups were also monitored illegally. Among them was the birth control advocacy organization Planned Parenthood. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the World Ice Art Championships in Fairbanks may be in jeopardy.
We're the only place in the world that has the opportunity to have the ice art championships that we do. And that needs to stay here.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering how public transportation benefits them, their businesses, and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, school, social opportunities, wherever people need to go. With public transportation available, the going is good. Find out more at goodgoingalaska.com. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Mobility Coalition, a nonprofit organization.
Legislative officials say Senator Albert Kukesh has met the requirements of an ethics judgment stemming from questionable comments he made to the Craig City Council. The Angoon Democrat represents the Prince of Wales Island community and about 125 other small cities and villages in southeast Alaska, Prince William Sound, and the interior. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The Legislative Ethics Committee last month found Kukesh violated state law by implying he might block Craig projects in the legislature. The Southeast Senator was accused of threatening the City Council while lobbying for the Sea Alaska Land Selection Bill that's before Congress. The Senator is chairman of the Regional Native Corporation's Board of Directors. The Ethics Committee told Kukesh to write a letter of apology. Chairman Gary Turner says it's been accepted by the panel.
The letter he sent out, we felt, was sufficient to satisfy what we had requested. And no, we feel this has been completed and is now over.
The Ethics Committee instructed Kukesh to send the apology to Craig officials. It also told him to send copies to the full Senate and media outlets within his district.
We would assume that he sent it to the right people. That was the requirement of our opinion. We're not going to go and track and call everybody and ask if they received it or not. That burden is on the senator and his office.
Nancy Barnes, Kukesh's chief of staff, says that's been done. The senator's three-paragraph letter says he accepts full responsibility for his poor choice of words. He says, quote, "I intend to be extra careful in the future that my words do not imply use of senatorial powers to obtain a favorable outcome from Craig or any other elected body or organization." Kukesh says he's glad the issue is resolved.
If the worst anybody can say about me after 14 years in legislature is that I said something to offend somebody, and I ended up having this complaint filed against me, I can live with that.
His comments to the Craig City Council, as well as the ethics complaint, led to critical newspaper editorials and a number of online personal attacks. His staff says it also brought letters and calls of support.
I really wish that people would look at the good things I've done in the 14 years of legislature and the 14 years I've built up my reputation to where it was, and to have this little thing beat me up, especially with the newspapers beating me up. I think I was unfair, and I just don't think that called for. But, you know, I want to put it behind me now, and I want to go on.
Kukesh says he has a good relationship with Craig officials, despite the controversy. The Prince of Wales Island City's mayor and top administrator were in his office about 2 weeks ago. They discussed local projects for the legislature's capital budget. Mayor Millie Schoonover says the ethics complaint did not come up, and she considers the matter resolved.
I personally, on my own personal basis, feels that we just need to move on. This should be done and over with, and hopefully it's all done and over with. And I feel pretty happy with what's happened as far as the apology letter goes.
A separate complaint regarding earlier comments Kukesh made to the Sitka Assembly was dismissed by the Ethics Committee. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
The Alcohol Beverage Control Board rejected all liquor license applications coming from the city of Bethel. The vote means that sales are still illegal there, even though it's an unrestricted alcohol community. From Member Station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson reports.
All six liquor license applications were voted down as one block in a unanimous 5-0 vote. The businesses up for consideration included 4 restaurants, 1 club, and 1 package store. The licensure process became available to them after Bethel voters revoked local option alcohol status last October. But 3 months later, in an advisory vote, residents overwhelmingly opposed alcohol sales in the city. The votes appear contradictory, but most believe it shows that the majority of Bethel residents don't want alcohol sales, but they also don't want state-imposed restrictions that come with being damp or wet. After the advisory vote, the Bethel City Council protested all of the applications before the ABC board. By law, those protests must be honored by the board unless they are found to be arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable. There are no other completed applications from Bethel before the ABC board. If any are submitted, they would likely be dealt with at the board's next meeting, scheduled for May 4th. That's the exact same date that Bethel residents will vote in another special election, which could opt the city back into local option. Reporting from Bethel, I'm Shane Iverson.
Lifelong Alaskan and Anchorage attorney Cliff Groh will be speaking tonight at the University of Alaska Anchorage on corruption in Alaska politics. Groh has worked for state government on both the legislative and executive branch sides and has worked as a state prosecutor. He was in Washington, D.C. during the Ted Stevens trial and has blogged extensively about the arrests and charges against state legislators. Groh says he followed the cases because he was bothered by what he calls the journey from the great optimism at the bonfire for statehood to what he calls the Breakfast Club.
The Breakfast Club would be my term for that day in August of 2006 when Bill Allen was flipped by the FBI. He thought he was going to breakfast and he ended up becoming an informant for the FBI.
He says there is a tendency among some Alaskans to blame the corruption solely on Bill Allen or because there was too much alcohol involved in many of the dealings of the lawmakers who were eventually charged. He says this is short-sighted, and although those factors did contribute, he says big money is really the problem. He says as a child, he remembers asking his father about reading about corruption in Chicago or Boston and why that didn't happen in Alaska.
And he said, well, son, there's not enough money to steal. And before the discovery that the supergiant Prudhoe Bay oil field in the late 60s and the construction of the pipeline, that was true. And there wasn't much money to steal in Alaska. Obviously, the economy has gotten a lot fatter.
Groh also says some political figures have a different mindset today about holding office. At one time, it was the top aspiration.
But they didn't tend to think that, hey, if I play my cards right, I can make a bunch, I can, you know, get out of the legislature and cash in and make a bunch of money as a lobbyist or a consultant on governmental affairs. And in recent years, that seems to have been a problem, including with some of 2 of the state legislators who were convicted in the present case.
Groh says a year ago, it looked likely that charges may be imminent against former state Senator Ben Stevens and Congressman Don Young. But he says that's less likely now, in part because Bill Allen is no longer a star witness for the prosecution. He says Department of Justice public integrity officials have also expressed concern over the challenges to the Honest Services Fraud statute that is currently before the Supreme Court.
Forget the Ted Stevens case. You know, that was a bad stain on us. But what's really endangering the whole future of the public integrity section is the future, the question about the future of the Honest Services Fraud statute. Because if that was wiped out, it would be very difficult for half or more of the cases that the public integrity section has on its plate to proceed.
Cliff Groh will be speaking tonight at 7:30 at UAA's Integrated Sciences Building. Links to his blog are at our website, aprn.org.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
The large gaping hole in the middle of downtown Juneau could become an Alaska Native cultural center. The Tlingit and Haida Central Council plans to buy the property at the corner of Front and Seward Streets, once the site of the Juneau Town Center. The historic building was destroyed by fire in August 2004. The tribal organization is still negotiating an undisclosed price with property owner Thomas Huntington, according to TNH President Bill Martin.
We have the plans already that we'd like to build.
Huntington himself has drawn the plans for the proposed Cultural Education and Tourism Center, but said he would not comment until negotiations with Tlingit and Haida are finalized. The plans show a 4- or 5-story building with a rooftop salmon bake and views of the Mount Roberts Tram and Gastineau Channel. Lower floors include a restaurant and coffee shop, a theater, business offices, and retail shops specializing in Native art and crafts. Martin says eventually Tlingit and Haida hope to open a tribal college in the building. Martin estimates the proposed center would cost $15 million. The original building, sometimes called the Skinner or Endicott Building, was 108 years old when it burned, displacing a number of commercial tenants. The proposed project is one reason Martin says he's planning to run again for Tlingit and Haida Central Council president. He says the grip of alcohol on many Alaska Natives is the main issue he wants to tackle if he wins re-election.
I could say drug and alcohol abuse, but the main issue on all of our problems is alcohol. And if we could do away with alcohol, we would have a whole better city and town and the whole area in Southeast Alaska. It seems to be the key to all the problems that we have.
Martin cites other major issues that entice him to run again, including suicide prevention, alcohol abuse, subsistence, and energy. Ice Alaska is threatening to end the World Ice Art Championships and close its popular sculpture and kids park in Fairbanks. The nonprofit group wants the state to transfer the land it operates on from the Alaska Railroad to the Fairbanks North Star Borough. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the request is an attempt to solve a long simmering dispute.
Ice Alaska and the railroad have been unable to settle on lease terms for the last 13 years. The volunteer ice group has remained on site through temporary extensions as the two parties have gone back and forth. Now facing a major rent hike in April, Ice Alaska organizers have given up on dealing with the railroad and want the state to transfer their venue site into Fairbanks borough hands. Ice Alaska Chairman Dick Brickley says his organization is prepared to call it quits if the move doesn't go through.
The legislature must act this session to transfer the ground to the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And if that does not happen, then the 2010 event is over. We'll start taking the park apart at the end of April.
Brickley says moving the ice park to another location is not viable due to the amount of work and infrastructure the volunteer group has put into the site over the last 21 years. Ice Alaska is gathering signatures of support for a land transfer outlined in a borough assembly resolution. Speaking at a recent assembly meeting, member Hank Bartos encouraged the public to get behind the transfer.
We're the only place in the world that has the opportunity to have the ice art championships that we do. And that needs to stay here because it brings in thousands of visitors to this community. It fills up hotel rooms. And I think it's imperative that we keep this crown jewel that our community has developed.
The acreage sought includes the current ice sculpture venue and other railroad lands along the Chena River from Pioneer Park to downtown Fairbanks. Brickley says the plan is to move part of the ice sculpture contest to the borough's park and extend its narrow gauge railroad across the Chena to downtown, following a route sprinkled with tourist and recreational activities.
A Disneyland kind of concept where people will have ice igloos, people can stay under the northern lights, we'll have all sorts of dog mushing, snow machine, cross-country skiing that people can do on the river, and really make it a winter wonderland.
Brickley says a host of local sports organizations support the idea, and Ice Alaska can raise funds to develop it if they can get the acreage. The land is part of 12,000 acres the Alaska Railroad has statewide that it does not use for operations but leases to raise money. Alaska Railroad Vice President of Real Estate and Facilities Jim Kubitz says he understands what Ice Alaska wants.
Everyone would want a piece of property that's worth $3 or $4 million for free. You know, but the railroad certainly doesn't support that without adequate compensation.
Cubitt says the railroad is working to negotiate a long-term lease for the Ice Park venue with the Fairbanks Borough, despite Ice Alaska's insistence on a land transfer. He says the railroad is prepared to extend the April deadline until a deal can be forged. Currently, there's no bill that proposes the land transfer, but Fairbanks State Senator Joe Pascvan says he plans to hold a hearing on the issue and bring all parties together in hopes of coming up with a resolution. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Commentator Earl Finkler, his wife Chris, and their two Alaska Huskies moved from Barrow to the small town of Medford, Wisconsin, in the summer of 2008. Tonight, he updates us on life in the lower 48 after more than 25 years at the top of the world.
It was difficult moving away from our home, friends, and neighbors in Barrow, so we were glad our two Greenland Huskies, Avu and Nuna, could be with us, including the five-week road trip from Alaska to Wisconsin. It was like having a part of the Arctic with us. I still remember driving up to our new home in Medford. The neighbors had a nice welcome sign on our porch and flowers in the planter. And just like the North Slope, meetings and social events here almost always revolve around food. No Eskimo donuts, caribou, or muktuk here, but we managed to get our fill of bratwurst, sauerkraut, and even cheese curds. Our neighbors routinely bring over homemade bread, cake, cookies, an apple crisp made from apple trees in their yard. We've been working hard to simplify our lives. No live television, lots of shopping at the farmer's market, and more gardening. Another similarity to Barrow, lots and lots of rummage sales. In the midst of settling in, we were very sad when our older husky Nuna had to be put down just before Christmas. She was 16 years old and could hardly walk or keep her balance. She will be greatly missed. For both Nuna and Avu, this was the first time they experienced trees. So we purchased a mountain ash tree in the nearby park, and we'll have a memorial sign there for Nuna. That's the report from up north in Wisconsin. We send warm greetings to you all. Stop by for some cheese curds if you're ever in the neighborhood. In Medford, with Chris and Avu, I'm Earl Finkler.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you miss any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We have reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld and Rosemary Alexander in Juneau, Shane Iverson in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and commentary from Earl Finkler in Medford, Wisconsin. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, on the web at grantstation.com, serving Alaskan organizations for over 10 years. ACS. With Android on ACS, an app is available to listen to NPR programming on your phone. Complete details at acsalaska.com. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, providing financial tools and resources for purchasing a home or planning for the future. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.